people who value their presence and their relationship and being citizens of this country, but who live in fear that their way of life is slowly being eroded away.
A congressional hearing on the Sea Alaska Lands Bill. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 17th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the health impacts of climate change in Alaska.
There is not a single food seller in Point Hope that is still frozen in the summertime.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, schools, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
The Obama administration weighed in today on the controversial Sea Alaska Lands Bill, signaling that the White House does not support it. The legislation would allow Sea Alaska Native Corporation to go outside of the original Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act lands for about 85,000 acres of the Tongass National Forest. But today, at a congressional hearing in Washington, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Deputy Undersecretary for Forestry, Jay Jensen, said while the department wants Sea Alaska to get its lands due them under ANCSA, USDA has concerns about this plan.
The bill would likely disrupt the delicate balance being struck around sustainable economic diversification and job stabilization on the forest. The lands being sought by Sea Alaska are some of the same lands that are essential to this balance.
The Bureau of Land Management weighed in on what it sees as problems. Marcy Lynn Burke, BLM Deputy Director, says it could set a precedent for other regional corporations.
We are concerned that this could lead or provide an impetus for other regional corporations to attempt to reopen their land claims at this final stage in the land transfer program. If this occurs, it will prolong the process of completing ANCSA entitlements.
Burke says BLM is also concerned with deadlines in the bill, which she says would favor Sea Alaska and put it before other corporations' land conveyances. Republican Congressman Don Young sponsored the House bill and sits on the Natural Resources Committee that hosted today's hearing. He sarcastically told Burke that the process of getting Sea Alaska its lands is really moving fast and has taken 39 years and questioned her concerns.
Have you or anyone else at BLM actually talked to any regional corporation about whether they would be okay with Sea Alaska going first?
I'm not aware of any conversations with other corporations.
So you took this upon yourself or the department to say that they would object to it?
I believe what the statement says is that placing a deadline for the conveyances to Sea Alaska necessarily would place that work ahead of the other work that the department is currently engaged in.
No, you said the regional corporations should be put ahead of the line.
Correct.
That's right. So that's what you said. Are you aware that there's a resolution signed by the Alaska Regional Corporation presidents, the CEOs, that fully supports this legislation?
I have not reviewed that material. I was told yesterday by representatives of Sea Alaska that such a resolution does exist.
Among those testifying for the lands exchange was Sea Alaska board member Byron Malott. He says the Tongass National Forest is home to the first people, the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian.
The only remaining people in the United States of America that still live on their homelands and have never, ever been defeated had a treaty. People who value their presence and their relationship and their collaboration and being citizens of this country, but who still live in fear that their way of life is slowly being eroded away. Mr. Chair, that is the fear of the way of life that I live with every single day of my life.
But commercial fisherman Don Hernandez said he's also worried about losing his way of life. He's from Point Baker and says the community opposes the bill and fears the Tongass will change forever if it passes.
The loss of any say about how the land surrounding us will be used is the focus of opposition to this bill. Recent scientific assessments show that old growth forests that Sea Alaska is seeking for economic development is some of the most biologically important forests in all of Southeast Alaska. What makes these areas so productive also makes them more vulnerable to damage from intensive clear-cut logging.
Sea Alaska and those opposed to the land swap dispute how extensive logging will be if the plan goes through. The Natural Resources Committee did not mark up the bill or vote on it, which would have to happen before it could reach the full U.S. House. The story of climate change reshaping our natural environment is well known, but the warming planet also has dramatic impacts on human health in Alaska and around the world. Health experts in the state addressed the topic at a forum last night in Anchorage, sponsored by the National Wildlife Federation. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Mike Brubaker has spent a lot of time studying climate change effects on health in the Northwest Alaska community of Point Hope. He co-directs the Center for Climate and Health at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Point Hope gets its fresh water supply from a lake 7 miles from town. During the summer months, the water is filtered and pumped to a giant storage tank. But Brubaker says in 2007, the number of days hotter than 46 degrees spiked.
Is that a tipping point? Well, we think so. We think that this is changing the ecology of the lake. And when we went and sat down with the water operators in Point Hope and looked at their logbook and then graphed the number of times that they had to change their water filters from a normal amount of maybe 3 or 4 times to what was actually happening in 2007 and 2008, where they were actually changing water filters up to almost 50 times every 24 hours.
The water operators think mosquito larvae are causing the problem. It's a financial strain on the community with increased labor hours. And it's not the only climate-related health issue the village is dealing with. Point Hope is a whaling community that relies on underground freezers to store the massive quantities of meat for year-round consumption.
Inside these traditional ice cellars, the temperature is below freezing all through the year. That was the situation until about 10 years ago when things started to change. And now there is not a single food seller in Point Hope that is still frozen in the summertime.
Brubaker says water now seeps into the underground storage units. He says for much of the year, they function more like refrigerators rather than freezers.
Inadequate storage condition is resulting in spoiled meat and blubber and maybe increasing the risk for foodborne illness. And the reports we got from some of the clinical staff in Point Hope that they were seeing increases in the spring of people who were hungry, especially elderly, and people in cases of anemia. They didn't know why, but this is the response they gave us. This is what they were curious about when we started talking about food insecurity in these food cellars.
The warming climate has also contributed to a surge in insect populations in Alaska. Dr. Jeffrey Demain is director of the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. He points to the alarming yellow jacket outbreak in Fairbanks in 2006 as an example.
In fact, it was estimated there was a tenfold increase, and this was by a biologist. In fact, with just 3 little soda bottle nests, he captured almost 4,000 yellow jackets in his yard. So during this time, there was a lot of sporting events canceled. I mean, people were being stung. This was a big problem. In addition to that, for the first time, we had 2 deaths within 4 weeks of each other as a result of yellow jacket stings.
Dr. Demain and other researchers studied sting events across Alaska and found the number of referrals to his clinic increased along with the temperatures. Dr. Demain says he's not a climate scientist, but it's important for medical professionals to consider how the environment can impact their patients. In Anchorage, with help from Kristen Spack, I'm Annie Feit.
Nome's fire siren blared at intervals through Tuesday night, announcing incoming mushers 2 miles out of town. The Iditarod's elite top 10 dog drivers completed their races by the wee hours of this morning as the second wave of early finishers continued through the day. APRN's trail reporter Ellen Lockyer has more.
Dallas Seavey arrived at the Iditarod finish line just before 1 a.m. Wednesday, beating his dad, Mitch Seavey, by 2 places in this year's Iditarod.
I haven't dozed off on a sled at all. I think I'm in very good shape.
Okay.
Sleeping bag
is right there.
Okay.
There we go.
Yep. Snowshoes?
Right beneath it?
Yep. Thought those were
promotional packet. Cooker, I thought I right there.
Dallas CV seemed pleased with his run to Nome.
And I need a signature.
Yeah, that will seal the deal here, huh?
Yeah, that seals the deal right there.
What was our total time there?
Looks like 9 days, 10 hours, 4 minutes, and 20 seconds.
That'll do, Pig.
QNAF arrived about an hour later, and Mitch Seavey made it in shortly after 3 a.m. That's two Seavey teams in the top 10 this year. The race is closing for mushers in the bottom half of the front. Kasilov's Paul Gebhardt arrived at full noon sunshine. Gebhardt said there was one thing he would not miss about this year's Iditarod.
It was really cold. I mean, we hit some 50 below stuff out there, and that takes a toll on the animals and the people. I raced with a lot of different contenders than I normally would in the position I was in, and we were all really cold. You know, it's hard to get warm, hard to stay warm, and hard to dry your stuff out.
Asked about the best and worst moments of the race.
Well, my most favorite part was getting right here. least favorite part of the trail probably, I've had problems in the burn the last several runs. I've always ended up carrying dogs. A couple of dogs I dropped, I carried through there. I carried a big 63-pounder and a 56-pounder, and the trail was very bumpy, and we kept tipping over, and it wasn't very much fun right then.
Rick Swenson squeezed into the top 20 Iditarod Finishers Club this afternoon.
One of the nicest runs from White Mountain I think I've ever had. The trail was really good and everything was good.
Multi-champ Swenson finished with 12 dogs.
They all did really good. I was proud of them, even the four that got dropped. I dropped more dogs this year than I dropped in the last 3 years. So that gives you an idea how tough it was.
Swenson made one thing plain about his 20th place finish. He told reporters he has no plans to quit Iditarod Racing. In Nome, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, environmental groups oppose a timber sale in Southeast.
In this case, we may well be talking about the very survival of the timber industry in Southeast Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, committed to supporting communities and Alaska residents beyond just their banking needs. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
A bill requiring disclosure of corporations or unions that contribute to political campaigns got a chilly reception in the House Judiciary Committee today, as Chairman Fairbanks Republican Jay Ramris challenged elements of the bill concerning presentation of sponsors to the public. The measure arose as a result of a U.S. Supreme Court decision allowing such contributions, and Alaska is one of 24 states needing to react to it. Anchorage Republican Bob Lynn, who as chair of the State Affairs Committee was responsible for writing the bill, recognize that there will be opposition to it. He asked the Judiciary Committee to think beyond the Supreme Court.
The bill is not about the decision itself, but if you agree with it, don't agree with it, think it's a good bill or good willing or bad willing, that's not the point. The bill is about letting our constituents throughout the state know who contributes and makes expenditures in the corporations and unions. In other words, the bill is actually, it's a disclosure bill.
However, Chairman Ramris said he has problems in dealing with the bill so quickly after the Supreme Court decision.
I'm concerned that we have this knee-jerk reaction to this whole ruling. I don't like knee-jerk legislation. It feels like that's what we're doing.
Lynn reminded Ramris that the subject was about the elective process, not about advertisements selling automobiles.
I don't think we have a knee-jerk reaction. Trying to protect the voters there so they know who is making these expenditures for or against a candidate, for or against an initiative. We need to know that kind of thing. And knee-jerk is a majority.
Ramris ended the meeting without taking up any amendments, simply saying he was setting the bill aside with no mention of future action. Three environmental groups are taking their case against a Prince of Wales Island timber sale to a higher court. They're seeking an injunction to stop logging they say will hurt wolves, deer, and salmon. The timber industry says the sale will keep Southeast's last mid-sized mill in business. And the Forest Service says tree cutting near Kaufman Cove will preserve enough wildlife habitat. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Kloak's Viking Lumber Company was the winning bidder in December's diesel timber sale, part of a larger offering called Logjam. The company agreed to pay $1.8 million to cut about 24 million board feet on nearly 1,200 acres about 60 miles northwest of Ketchikan. A month later, about the same time Viking began work, three environmental groups filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court. They asked for an immediate injunction against the Forest Service to stop the logging. On March 8th, the court turned them down. The groups are taking their case up a legal notch, appealing the injunction decision to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Cordova's Gabe Scott, who works for Cascadia Wildlands, says the appeal can't wait.
We're just afraid that the trees will all be cut by the time we make it through the court system. That's the sense of urgency from us, is to get a real decision on the merits before all the trees are gone.
Cascadia and the other groups, Greenpeace and the Tongass Conservation Society, oppose plans to log the larger logjam area, which includes the diesel sale. Scott says tree cutting will hurt wildlife as well as people.
When you log all the old growth trees, there's not winter habitat for deer, and there's not all of the clear gravels you need for salmon. And when there's not enough deer and not enough salmon, then all the things that depend on them also kind of go by the wayside. And the two important ones of those, we think, are human beings, subsistence users, commercial fishermen, guides, and wolves that still live here and rely on that ecosystem as well.
The Forest Service, which designed the sale, does not comment on active lawsuits, and a spokeswoman, while providing information, would not speak on tape. But the agency all along has said the timber sale will protect the environment while providing jobs to loggers, road builders, and mill workers. The administration of Governor Sean Parnell says the sale will preserve more than 110 jobs, and that's not all.
In this case, we may well be talking about the very survival of the timber industry in Southeast Alaska.
Tom Lenhart of the State Department of Law says Viking is the last mid-size mill operating in Southeast Alaska. There are no large mills, and one of the other mid-size mills, in Wrangell, is being dismantled. Lenhart says the region needs this sale.
Without that timber, this mill will, within a month or two, be forced to shut down. And it appears that it is very possible that if they shut down this time, it will be for good.
The state filed to intervene in the environmental group's lawsuit in U.S. District Court. Lenhart says it will also try to be part of deliberations at the Ninth Circuit Court, which is based in San Francisco. Carol Cairns works with Ketchikan's Tongass Conservation Society. She says the sale's old-growth forest has value beyond Viking Mills markets.
You can't make a piano out of just any old tree. You need a 200-year-old Sitka spruce to do that with. And you don't find those just anywhere. And you can't grow them in a week, you know, or 20 years, or 30 years, or 50 years.
Viking Lumber could not be reached for comment. The Ninth Circuit Court could rule on the injunction motion this month. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The House today passed a bill setting up a statewide energy policy. Written by the Energy Committee after lengthy hearings around the state last summer and fall, the bill sets goals for the state to meet in dealing with a hoped-for change from petroleum to renewable and alternative energy supplies and to conserve energy at all levels. Among the policy goals is to reduce energy consumption by 15% per person by 2020. It also is looking for half the state's electricity to come from renewable energy generation by 2025, and to continue to produce fossil fuels for the rest of the country and to provide natural gas for Alaskans. Committee co-chair Anchorage Republican Charisse Millett said the policy goals are broad and big, but they are attainable.
We have more than 120 bills, energy-related bills, in this body in committee right now. I think we really need to make sure that the overarching policy meets all the criteria in those pieces of legislation as we go through and talk about how we want our state to be as far as energy resources go.
The measure passed with no votes against it and will next be heard in the Senate. A plan for trucking North Slope natural gas to Fairbanks was laid out for the public at meetings in Fairbanks yesterday. The publicly owned Alaska Gas Line Port Authority wants to sell bonds to buy the private utility Fairbanks Natural Gas, build a processing facility on the North Slope, and truck gas to Fairbanks for distribution on an expanded local pipeline network. FNG President Dan Britton said the project accommodates possible gas pipelines while protecting Fairbanks from the rising price of oil, the fuel it currently relies on for heating and power.
What does this community do if a gas line is not built? What does this community do if a bullet line is not built? What have we done to protect ourselves into the future? This project provides the bridge if those are successful and the insurance if they're not.
The project calls for the Port Authority to sell $250 million in bonds that would be paid back with revenue from gas sales, but the operation would be nonprofit. The group is currently negotiating a purchase price for Fairbanks Natural Gas, which has a long-term contract with Exxon for gas. The deal also hinges on Golden Valley Electric signing on as the anchor gas consumer. GVEA CEO Brian Newton spoke in favor of buying the North Slope gas due to makeup for the decline in Cook Inlet gas from Anchorage.
They're certainly not selling us economy energy anymore, and we don't see this picture changing. In fact, I'm here to tell you, this is the model that we're faced with unless we do a project like this LNG. You know, we're going to burn 50% or more of our generation from oil. That's what we're faced with. That's why you've seen the increase in your bills. And that's why you'll see the bills relatively flat, because we're burning a lot more oil than we've ever burnt.
Newton said at current oil prices, the average residential Golden Valley customer would see a $6 to $7 decrease in their monthly power bill if North Slope gas is added to the utility's power generation. GVEA could use gas to fire a new dual-fuel power plant at North Pole. Newton said the gas would be a cheaper fuel unless oil drops below $55 a barrel. The project's North Slope gas processing plant would also make lower-cost propane, which could be shipped to consumers outside the Fairbanks distribution network, including rural Alaska residents. By a 6-5 split last night, the Anchorage Assembly voted to again delay the Kinnick Arm Bridge project until 2018. The vote was advisory only, but that didn't reduce the fervor of the public hearing. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The Assembly resolution centered on whether to put the proposed Kinnick Arm Crossing project into Anchorage's short-term or long-term transportation plans. The testimony from Bobby Wells, Mary Barr, Bob French, Richard Langtell, and Mike Rogers shows the public remains on opposite shores.
I don't want it in the long term. I want it now.
That this city ever had to be evacuated or people moved, the bridge wouldn't do that much, but it would give us a needed third access of a way out of town.
Expensive, short-sighted, useless visionary projects like the railroad terminal at the airport, the barley terminal in Valdez, the mothballed clean coal plant in Healy, or even the agricultural lands at Point McKenzie.
As soon as that thing starts going in, okay, that's a lot of jobs. And these are not McDonald's wage jobs.
Somebody needs to come up with some numbers. After all, if it was that profitable, it would have been built last year.
Assembly Chair Pat Flynn sponsored the resolution keeping the bridge in the long-term transportation plan. It reflected the opinion of the Municipal Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as a recent recommendation from the AMATS Technical Committee to the Assembly. AMATS stands for Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Systems. In his resolution, Flynn cited, quote, changes in the financial market that challenged the viability of the public-private partnership originally envisioned for the project, end quote, as well as the unknown status of the Cook Inlet Beluga Critical Habitat designation. Flynn says these are reasons for a long-term status. Chair of the Bridge and Toll Authority, Michael Foster, said pushing the bridge back to 2018 would impact the permitting process and finances.
Right now, we have a biological assessment that has been submitted to Federal Highways. That's for the listing of the Beluga Well. We expect a biological opinion, which is the review of that document. We're anticipating a no jeopardy. But once we have that, then we'll be able to get a record decision from Federal Highways, which we expect to be this fall. Okay. If it moves further out, it's very likely that the final EIS will have to be moved into a supplemental EIS. So a lot of the money that has been spent will be spent again.
EIS is Environmental Impact Statement. Assemblymember Jennifer Johnston wondered if the estimated $680 million project would seek state backing as it searched for a private partner.
You won't have a revenue bond with a state backing?
Well, it's possible. I'm actually in Juneau next week with revenue going over some different scenarios.
Governor Parnell's administration supports a short-term status, as well as Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. During a break in the assembly meeting, Sullivan said considering population growth in south-central Alaska, the bridge is a good idea, especially if no state or municipal money is involved. Opponents to short-term status questioned the authority's projected revenues. No one disputes the Matsu population is growing. But Lois Epstein, who serves on the AMATS Technical Committee, questioned why the authority used population projections from a contracted Texas firm rather than those from the university's Institute of Social and Economic Research. The Bridge Authority used population estimates to predict traffic and toll revenue. The University Research Center predicts at least 46,000 fewer Matsu residents in 2030 than the Texas firm. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you miss any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Nome, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Brass in Fairbanks, and Len Anderson and Kristen Spack in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.